Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now an open house to our second former Australian Deputy Prime Minister within a month. I know many of you revelled in our interview with John Anderson last month, well worth podcasting from our Open House Community website. Now to a man John Anderson succeeded, a thoughtful, entertaining, true Aussie character, Tim Fischer, Deputy Prime Minister to John Howard between 1996 and 1999. He went on to become Australia's man at the Vatican, ambassador to what's called the Holy See in 2009, and retired from that post last year. Now he's written his memoir documenting his 1,000 days in Rome. It's called Holy See, Unholy Me. He wore a black Akubra around the Vatican. He dined with the Pope and Colonel Gaddafi. He saw the dog of our Italian ambassador, Amanda Vanstone, bite the Pakistani ambassador. And there's much more. Intriguing, revealing, highly entertaining, and a great storyteller, Tim Fischer. Welcome to Open House.
Greetings to Lee. Nice to be on Open House.
Great to have you with us. Thanks so much, Tim. You've taken on lots of very serious, very high-profile jobs, and yet you've always done it with humour and, I'd say, flair and lots of Aussie charm. What makes Tim Fischer so Tim Fischer, do you think?
Look, it's perhaps growing up on a farm, a strong family and faith background, but then again, the short burst of 3 years in the army bookended one end of my career, and Rome bookended the other. So, in a sense, much of my early life and public career in state and federal parliament was, if you like, a preparation for then stepping up to be the first Rome resident Australian ambassador to the Holy See.
What was it that drove you into politics in the first place, Tim? As you said, initially state politics.
It was an opportunity as I came out of the army that there had been a redistribution. I elected to stand for pre-selection for that, and against the odds, secured election to the state parliament at age 24, the New South Wales state parliament, and so away we went. But I must say I owe a great deal of thanks to many good people along that long pathway, and not least of which is my family, and my Jesuit teachers at Xavier College in Melbourne played a key role as well.
Why the move to Canberra, Tim?
It was a big switch. In 1984, the opportunity suddenly came about. I remember Nick Greiner saying, stay at the state level because you will be a minister within a couple of years. And I said, yeah, but you only get these opportunities once in a lifetime. And so I elected to switch to federal parliament. I had a particular interest in trade and transport issues, tourism issues, the three T's, if you like, and things kicked on from there.
What did your Jesuit teachers give you? How did they equip you for the roles and the life that you've gone on to take on and live, Tim?
Motivation and curiosity. And I think your previous ex-DPM friend, John Anderson, would allow that he also gained much from his education, in his case, boarding school in Sydney, in my case, boarding school in Melbourne. And, you know, you get thrown into these things. You don't altogether enjoy them initially, but you sort of have a grand design of life that if that opportunity is coming along, you might as well make the most of that opportunity, learn as much. So motivation and curiosity, Lee, was the particular commodities, and a good rounding out on the history, the mathematics, social studies, English and so forth, but those two ingredients I do dwell on, motivation and curiosity.
I think in the intense world and often the very small and intimate world of politics, I can imagine that big picture view of life being of incredible value.
Yes, as we went on to kick a few goals, I was to judge that, but and of course associated with all that is the art of scheduling, which in this acerbic world of 24/7 news cycles and mass media, mass social media and the like is pretty demanding to this day, especially no secretary and lots to do, lots of emails each morning during this period of book launch activity with the book Holy See, Unholy Me, 1,000 Days in Rome.
So can I ask briefly how you've reflected on both the conduct of the most recent election campaign and its result? How have you looked on from the outside into that, Tim?
I think people are ready for change, and every now and then monumental change takes place. The joy of Australia's democracy is that you can have big shifts in voting and acceptance of the result, pretty accurate form of counting, no wholesale rigging, and a set of new members for the House of Representatives, some new members for half the Senate, and away we go with a new parliament. And I rejoice in our democracy. I reflect sadly on the situation in so many countries in the Middle East and Africa, leaving a great deal to be desired in this regard.
Did you rejoice to be out of it when you saw how the campaign
Absolutely.
Happened?
It was time to move on. I had autistic son Harrison, and he's doing well, and Dominic and other things, but then suddenly out of left field, back into it, at least in a wonderful posting, representing the Australian government, the Australian parliament, the Australian people, to the nation city-state of the Vatican itself, a member of the United Nations.
Tim, you worked so closely with John Howard as his deputy. Love him or loathe him, he's been a most significant figure in Australian politics. How did you observe him up close and personal?
He was a not-so-good chairman of shadow cabinet. He was a very good chairman of cabinet, and he'd learnt along the pathway of politics on his reincarnation as leader and then prime minister. He ran a very good cabinet government, and if you had a particular point of view, you certainly were allowed to get it across and have sway on guns. He gave great leadership, and Australia, you are now 15 times more safer here. In other words, put it the other way, in the USA, you are 15 times more likely to be shot dead per 1,000 people than here in Australia, and that's due to us stepping away from the NRA pathway, controversial legislation, buyback, but it worked.
Yes. Any regrets for anything the Howard government did or that happened around it?
Well, we should have built more railway lines, of course.
We
did. Adelaide-Darwin facilitated that, and it's made a profit, operating profit every year of its operation since 2004. We should have built high-speed rail, and now that's perhaps in the pipeline. This country needs high-speed rail technology. It's been operating in Japan 50 years. Zero fatalities. Let's get on with it.
I'd love to ask you about your love of trains. There's no other way of putting it. Where did that begin? What's driven that, Tim?
Well,
why trains?
It's a little town called Borey Creek, and I used to go in with my father to buy the Sunday morning papers on a Monday night when that rail motor came round the corner with its great big searchlight, great excitement. And I can still vividly recall all of that. And someone forgot to load the Sunday papers onto the rail motor at the Rock with a junction on the main line in the Riverina, there was hell to pay.
Yes. You even took to the Vatican rail service in your 1,000 days there, very underused line. But
yeah,
it held a fascination.
So I took the opportunity to help organise a steam train, the Caritas Express, with Monsignor Robert Vitillo of Caritas, with Luigi Cantamessa of Trenitalia Railways, and with the Pope's chief railway master, station master, Cardinal Laiola, who gave approval and stood by that approval. So I just find in that grand finale year as ambassador, you have enough seniority, I guess, enough cheek, enough boldness to do good things, enjoyable things, and things which, in this case, raised some $20,000 for the Haiti earthquake appeal.
It's a great story. Politics can be such a nasty game, Tim, both personally and professionally. How were you able to rise above that and become a universally popular figure with both sides of the parliament?
Well, you pursued your partisan cause. You stepped up, talked up, absolutely defended the issues you were passionate about, but we always remembered what Artie Fadden used to say, and that is the best bowlers aren't all in the one team, one side. They're not all on the one side. And I think the majority of people in Parliament on both sides are seeking to do what they judge is best for Australia, and on three quarters of the legislation of any government in any Parliament goes through without opposition because it is broadly good legislation, required legislation. But the other quarter, you debate, but you debate in an honourable way.
You were such a character in Parliament. Does our Parliament need more characters?
Yes, absolutely. Mick Young, Jim Killen, pick two, Charles Anderson, VC, from the electorate of Hume, former National Party member. These were people of great character who had done interesting things outside of Parliament, and they brought those experiences from the shearing shed floor, from the outer bar coup. As Jim Killen used to say, I may well be an ex-jackaroo from the outer Baku, but, and away he would go, in many ways self-educated.
Yeah.
And I think too many aficionados, too many apparatchiks dominate the composition of the many ranks of the political parties on both sides today.
I always remember a nickname that was attached to you, 2 Minute Tim. Can you explain to our listeners why that happened?
The nickname arose because of the size of my electorate, and I could not spend 2 hours in every town when it stretched from just near Canberra and Mount Kosciuszko through Cancoban, Albury, Tokemwal, Deniliquin, right through to Wentworth, and right up then and around Broken Hill.
And that also extended to conversations around Parliament. You're always quick.
I was focused. I had a lot to do. I had a lot to do as Deputy Prime Minister, Minister for Trade, Federal Leader of the National Party, and Federal Member for Farah in the ultimate phase. And you don't muck around if you're going to get through 18-hour days, day after days, especially the parliamentary sitting fortnight. But equally, I enjoyed a laugh, and John Button, I think, had the greatest phrase. He described me as the world expert on speaking Aubrey Afrikaans, and I thought that was a great description.
What a great tribute from a man on the other side of politics. Your retirement from politics was quite a shock. You were Deputy Prime Minister at the time. Can you take us through briefly the factors that led to that decision, Tim?
Look, I just suddenly thought I'd end up on a jumbo, not sitting in the front seats, but in the box in the back underneath, collapsing on a trade trip, which were always interesting but extraordinarily demanding physically, while you're micromanaging issues abroad and at home, trade negotiations abroad, APEC negotiations, as well as minute political issues in your own electorate on location of highways and bypasses, and great to see the Holbrook bypass open on the correct location west of town selected many years ago. And you do have a huge volume of work to cover, little chance to read. And the joy of stepping back from politics is now a lot more chance to read, to research, to write, and hence a couple of books, Trains Unlimited in the 21st Century, 2 years ago, and now the book on Rome.
You also needed to spend more time with your family.
Absolutamente. And look forward to my weekends especially and try and protect them now, absolutely.
And a large part of that was your son's autism. How's he travelling these days, Tim?
Yeah, he's good. He plays a great game of chess. We often play chess, invariably. In fact, he checkmated me brilliantly a few days ago, so I've got to lift my game.
You need more practice.
Dominic plays less chess, but plays a lot of football and basketball and so forth, so you shoot a few hoops. But it's a situation where it's still a bit too hectic for my liking, so yeah. I'm trying to ease back.
Your appointment to the Vatican, for the uninitiated, can you explain how and why there are ambassadors appointed to the Vatican as opposed to just being an ambassador to Italy?
Because under the Lateran Treaty, the Vatican is a separate sovereign state. It has 44 hectares of land. The Vatican City is the capital of the nation city state of the Holy See. And it is a member of the United Nations. And so you have ambassadorships, 80 Rome resident ambassadors and 60 more non-Rome resident, might be in Dublin and elsewhere, that come down to Rome 4 times a year. The main reason, I think, that caused the government to send me was to boost up our campaign for the United Nations Security Council, especially as there are many Latin American, every Latin American country, large and small, Brazil, right through to Guatemala and Honduras, are all with Rome resident ambassadors to the Holy See and to Italy, two separate people, two separate embassies. And my target was to maximise Australia's leverage, because some of the Latin Americans were saying, unless and until Australia has a Rome resident ambassador to the Holy See, we won't take them seriously in the UN context.
You also went with a deep commitment to the Catholic faith.
That's true, and I enjoyed a particular parish on the other side of the Tiber from the Vatican called Caravita, a great church in the round run by a Jesuit and a couple of others. It was just one of those great renewals with parish life in a way which In the busyness of life, I had not identified with a particular parish so much back here. I have now. And there is a joy in having a strong commitment to community and also to parish community.
Kevin Rudd was the one who appointed you. Was that a surprise?
Well, yes, the phone rang and he offered this. I think it was a wise decision, if I might say so, to pick someone senior from the other side of politics so that the issue of upgrading in Rome to two embassies did not become an issue. I mean, we have two embassies in Geneva. We have neither of which can be an embassy to Switzerland. That has to be handled by someone in Bern or someone in Berlin. The same sort of rules apply as apply in Rome. Now, the best way to explain this is, why do we not have an ambassador to the Archbishop of Canterbury and to Lambeth Palace and to Canterbury? Because it is not a sovereign separate entity to Great Britain, United Kingdom. In fact, it's the Church of State of the UK. Had there been 44 hectares set aside around the magnificent Cathedral of Canterbury and declared a sovereign state, then no doubt down at Dover we would have an embassy to Canterbury.
Yeah. As you immersed yourself more into parish life during your 1,000 days there, what did it do for you personally, away from your professional role?
Look, I think it renewed my faith. It restored my faith. It restored Christian friendship and also another window into some incredible history in and around Rome. Mozart played in the Caravita Church in 1770 at about age 17 when he wasn't allowed to copy down a Te Deum he'd heard over the river. So he raced back, played the organ and wrote it all out that same said afternoon, and that organ's just been restored. I mean, organ concerts, go find Widor's Toccata No. 5. It's a great way to wind out this program because it is, in fact, the exact piece often played at the end of St. Peter's long masses and ceremonies, and it's just one of those joys. The job is done. Step out into the world again. And so I re-engaged with music, with organ concerts, but re-engaged with a lot of very good people who were very helpful in the Caravita Church setting in building my knowledge of diplomatic minutiae, but also issues like food security and ramifications for Australia with regard to food security.
You've shared some fantastic stories in your book about your 1,000 days in Rome. Can I rip through a few highlights just briefly? Pope Benedict away from the limelight, your impressions?
He spoke English carefully. He was very concerned about the Victorian bushfire victims of Black Saturday and was very generous to my family and met Harrison. And Harrison said to him, "How are you? Have you had a good day?" And he said, "Yes. Will you keep the church together?" And Pope Benedict replied, "Well, I'll try," with a big smile. So he was engaging, a good teacher, a good theologian, less so a good manager. He admitted that, and that's why he took the brilliant step of resigning in February of this year, as I had predicted in my manuscript.
A meal with Colonel Gaddafi. What was that like?
I brushed past him because my instructions were to go attend this official banquet, but not shake his hand. So I managed to use the large figure of the President of Sri Lanka, who was engaged in conversation with Gaddafi, to slip past and head straight to Gaddafi's lobster.
It is a great story, well worth reading for that alone, this book. Mary MacKillop's canonisation, you were very involved in that.
It was a spectacular occasion. 8,000 Australians in Rome, about 12 had their passports nicked. That was less than we thought would be the case, and we replaced those. Oh. One broken ankle, but a MCG-type roar across St. Peter's Square at the mention of Mary MacKillop. We certainly did over the other five contingents representing Canada and Spain and Italy for the other five saints. But it was superb to see the smiling face of Mary MacKillop up on the facade of St. Peter's Basilica. And the mass on the Monday afterwards, the Thanksgiving mass down at St. Paul's outside the walls, was very special indeed.
Tim, through your time there, the issue of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church continued to mount and deeply damaged the Church. What needs to be done there?
Look, it is most necessary that there be absolute accountability, absolute transparency, and no parish swapping of priests who have broken their vows and offended. And this message was very clear from Pope Benedict, but he was let down by many of the people down the ladder in the Curia and beyond. Pope Benedict said, and I use his words, there is filth in the church. It must be dealt with. Well, I think Pope Francis is and will, and has stepped up in a way where he's now also appointed a new deputy in the great Pietro Parolin, who I know quite well from my first period in Rome, and he will be an outstanding Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, replacing Cardinal Bertone.
If there's one thing that you took away, I'm sure there were many, but one major thing that you took away from your time at the Vatican, what would that be?
It is that Rome is a super hub of the world, which should not never be underestimated. But it's also, on a personal and a Christian front, a great tonic, a great privilege to have represented Australia. And that's why I wrote the book, is to share some of the joy, some of the hard work dimensions, issues like food security and even the difficult issue of Pope Pius XII and the Nazi period of occupation of Rome. But all in all, some proceeds going to charity from the book. It is just a great chance to have others happily interface with my period as representing Australia in Rome.
What's next for Tim Fisher?
Quite a period, a lot to do on the farm. Good spring, so very lucky, back with the family, and maybe one more book. We'll have to wait and see. What I do know, but I think people way beyond the Catholic Church will actually get a buzz out of reading Holy See, Unholy Me, 1,000 Days in Rome, because it is, in a sense, a generalist book. It's not heavily focused on the Catholic Church, and it is reflecting the fact that Rome is a hub, and I was representing Australia to the government of the Holy See.
And unsurprisingly, it's filled with lots of wonderful stories of typical Tim Fisher brand. Tim, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House. We'll put the details of the book up on our Open House community Facebook page. Great to talk.
Thank you, Lee. All the very best, and arrivederci.
And to you too. And we'll go out with Tim's suggestion, Widor's Staccato number 5 in F minor.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.